This is the Tom Likas Show.
He's a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
Now, the host of the Internet's number one call-in show, Tom Likas.
Thank you for tuning in to the Tom Likas Show. From Wilsonville, Oregon, this is where you hear us live, Monday to Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 24-7 at tom.show. You can hear us on our free app. Get it at the App Store. Get it at Google Play. Or get it at tomeverywhere.com. That's tomeverywhere.com. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for being part of the program. We appreciate it. Here we are together again. You and me, it's a bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show. And joining us for this bonus hour, as he always does, here he is, criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. Welcome, Adam.
Hey, nice to be here, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What's going on in the world of criminal law?
Well, I want to talk about a couple of things tonight. And it's, you know, criminal law and everything. It's a big news story today is the Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie divorce that everyone's all excited about. But we've got to talk about this death certificate, Tom. It's critical. Absolutely critical.
Before everything else? Okay.
I got it. I've got it right here.
You are chomping at the bit.
I can't let it go. So, as we know, you had this ex-girlfriend, and she had married some guy years later and was living her life, and we know that she wasn't necessarily the most financially stable person in the world. We found a lot of financial stuff about her was a little bit odd. But it turns out she died, and I applied for her death certificate, and I've got the original right here. And she died of suffocation, Tom. As an accident, and it says on the certificate...
How do you accidentally suffocate yourself?
I'm just getting to that.
Oh, okay.
It says that she was face down in her pillow while intoxicated. Now, that begs the question that you just asked, Tom, which is, how the hell is that possible? This is apparently at her house... this is in the daytime or something, not particularly unusual. And I'd like to know how that could happen. I don't think that makes sense to me. Now, we've seen, you know, like in the hospital movies where the person gets, you know, suffocated with a pillow or whatever, you know?
Right.
Like a cuckoo's nest or whatever. And we've always heard about, like, Jimi Hendrix, who, you know, kind of drug addict overdose where he vomits and then, like, you know, he's so screwed up with drugs that he chokes on his own vomit or whatever. That's pretty rotten way to go. But this person died with their face in their own pillow at their own house and were so drunk that they couldn't, like, turn their face not to suffocate themselves. Like, I mean, if you tried to suffocate yourself on purpose, that would be really hard to do, right? I mean, your body has all these reactions, right? If you were, you know, if you're trying to hold your nose or put your face in the water, your body would, you know, thrash around and take you out. And so, you know, here, she's so drunk that she doesn't get out of her own pillow. I think this is unbelievable, Tom.
I found it hard to believe myself, frankly, although I've never read a million death certificates. I've heard the story, which turned out, I guess, not to be true, but for years we believed that the singer from the 60s, Cass Elliot, had choked on a ham sandwich and died. And, yeah, we've heard the Jimi Hendrix story and other stories
Poppers,
about people choking on their vomit, choking on their own blood, what have you.
If you talk with a lady,
but I've never heard of a person getting drunk, putting their head down on a pillow, and suffocating themselves cause they're drunk.
Right. And then she ends up then having a burial at sea?
Well, people do that, but I know what you're saying, and I frankly, I think the same thing. You know, It sounds awfully suspicious.
Yeah, that's all I can say. I don't know. I don't know that we can reopen the case like in the movies, but it is very strange. And I think.
Well, by now you've disposed of the evidence.
Well, yeah. I think the old Lycus instincts are telling me that something isn't right. I think you were right. Very bizarre.
And I believe that from the first time I heard that, there'd just been no word from her. Nothing. People hadn't heard anything.
No. I don't know. If her husband had some kind of a big insurance policy that he just collected on her, I think that would be the icing on the cake. That that she was valuable to him being dead.
Isn't it true, though, that, or did they change this? Wasn't it true at one time that if you committed suicide, for example, that somebody could not collect?
Right, of course.
So this is definitely, it's not ruled a suicide, it's ruled accidental.
Correct. That's right.
So, yeah.
That's the beauty of it from the point of view of the insurance. And since it's an accident, they actually might get even more than the regular payout. I think when it's an accident, you can get double or triple. But suicide, you're right, generally does not get paid. So there you have it, Tom. As bizarre as
wow.
it gets.
I knew there would be a strange ending to this. I knew there was no way this was just going to be died of natural causes or any of that. This was an otherwise healthy person.
Now, speaking of dying of natural causes, I have occasionally, and I think you said you used to live near the guy and see him at like the flea market. I have occasionally seen Brad Pitt out and about in West Hollywood and so forth.
Yes.
And all I can say is that he looked like someone that really wanted to be shot, you know? You know in the Alien movie when the creatures invaded your body and you say, please kill me, you know?
Right.
I think that, I don't know, maybe it was the 10 kids or whatever it was, or 8 kids. But there's this big astonishment out in the world today now that apparently Angelina Jolie has filed for divorce. And we'll certainly talk more about it next week. But you remember that I had a guy on the show about 2 weeks ago who was Czech. And he was arrested for domestic violence and some other factors. And I've had a lot of people asking me what happened and where to go and everything. And this is something that I want to talk about briefly tonight. In terms of criminal law, it's important to understand how things work. And it's very, very different in the United States and certainly in Western countries than in other places. In the classic civil law, which was usually from countries that are connected to France, that were colonies and so forth, the person who is accused had to prove that they were innocent. And in the British law that we adopted, it's just the opposite. And people think they know this, but it ends up causing a lot of strange results. Now, for example, because the thing has to be proven by the state, the entire burden of evidence is upon the state. And so that Czech guy, I'm sorry to say, did not listen to me, and he went to the detective on the case and gave the guy a whole lot of information which he felt would exonerate him and show that he was innocent. But in our system, it's just the opposite. You don't give information to the police because that's going to be used against you. You know, when you look at the thing that they say to you, which is reading you your rights, they say you have the right to remain silent and that anything you say can and will be used against you. That's from the case Miranda versus Arizona. That's called the Miranda rights. And what they don't say is that it might be used against you. They say it can and will be used against you. And that's a very important distinction that people need to understand. This is not something that might happen. They are definitely going to use whatever you tell them or whatever you give them against you. If you look at how it works, fundamentally, you have the police, which are the arm of the state that enforces laws. And people go into law enforcement, right? And they study law enforcement and criminal justice. And when the police arrest you, There's then the next layer within the police. When some crime has happened, they're gathering evidence, they make an arrest or they write you a ticket or charge you. Then there's the level of detectives, which is a kind of specialized police person, usually used to be a street policeman that eventually took exams and, you know, was very smart and got to the next level and became a detective. And that's a person that tries to pull the pieces together and to organize it in a case. And all of that evidence is then written down and gathered and then handed over to the prosecutor's office. And that's that has different names. We have a city attorney. We have a district attorney. In some places, they call it a parish attorney. And this is the group that is, you know, there. They work for the government, and they prosecute cases. And these are the ones that write it up and charge you. Now, people don't understand that when you then go to court, you know, it's kind of weird because it seems like, you know, the prosecutor is always at the prosecutor's desk and the judge is always there. And it's almost as though they work for the same people. Now, it's true that the judge also gets paid by the government, but the judge is neutral. And that's one of the things that also confuses people. I have a lot of people that go to court and start talking to the judge and saying to the judge, you know, what should I do? How should I fill this out? Should I plead guilty? And the judge is not supposed to give you legal advice. That's very confusing to people because the judge's neutrality means that he is not your advocate. He's supposed to be, or she, is supposed to be looking at the evidence of the case and looking at the procedure and making sure that things are being done properly and that you're being treated fairly. Now, we have a system that's so remarkable that even the most despicable people, and you talk about people that have committed horrible crimes, there's still a great concern that their civil rights are being handled properly, that they're getting correct procedure. And there have been people that are convicted of very serious crimes that it turned out the judge had been unfair to them or the system had been unfair to them in some way, and their convictions were overturned. There's a guy, this is, you know, kind of an East Coast story that I'm sure you'll relate to, Tom, but there was a retailer guy named Crazy Eddie who embezzled millions and millions of dollars from his company and then moved abroad. When he was finally found and brought back to the United States, he was put on trial, federal court, and he was convicted. And it turned out, later on, he did an appeal. That it turned out that the judge had been biased and had done things that were unfair to him. In another society, they'd say, who gives a crap? I mean, the guy's guilty as hell. He ripped off a lot of investors. You know, so what if the judge wasn't perfectly fair? But in our society, that made his case be overturned. And ultimately, that's what happened. And that happens to a lot of people. I heard someone today on the news was talking about the person who supposedly put all these bombs in New York and New Jersey, and he's having a bail hearing. And this person was saying, why should he have a bail hearing? He's a terrorist and he's a scumbag and he should, you know, be taken out back and shot. And the answer is, as crazy as it is, in our society, he's been charged with a crime and he has the right to have a hearing, due process, according to the 14th Amendment, to have fair bail. And there's supposed to be a hearing for that, and he's going to have that hearing. And theoretically, it's going to be a very large bail, but if he could post it, which he probably won't be able to, but if he could, then he'd be allowed out on bail while his case is pending. And this is the idea of our system. People have to recognize this, because what happened, as I mentioned, with this gentleman that I was having as our guest on the radio, was that he thought that he could go to the detective and show him the evidence, and it was going to be so compelling that the detective would throw the case out. And unfortunately, that is never going to happen. There have been many, many instances where there have been shown, whether it's fair or not, that the police or the detectives were not absolutely sure, and we're talking about like 100 or 98% or whatever, sure, that they had the right person. But the way they consider it is what they call the beyond a reasonable doubt. So they say, well, I'm not positive, but it's okay because we're going to let the jury decide. And so if you give them materials and you pile on and show, look, you know, it was this and it was that, that's not going to help your case if it's not presented correctly. It's much more likely that they're going to sift through the things that you've given them and they're going to take them and use them against you. And in his case, because it had to do with domestic violence and so forth, and if you recall, he was with a woman that was pregnant. When she finally does have that child, if he has by then a conviction of domestic violence because of this carelessness, whatever the punishment might be, which might only be probation or some kind of restraining order or making some kind of restitution financially, the problem is that that is then going to be used against him in a very big way later on. The reality of the courtroom, this is something that's very important to understand, whether it's fair or not, and this is something that people certainly are concerned about in terms of discrimination or racial discrimination, for example. You know, when you go to court, and I see this all the time, you know, when you go to court by yourself and you try to represent yourself, the way you're treated, the way the system deals with you is cruel. It really is. You're going to get chewed up and spit out. And the way that the courts interact with people that use what's called the public defender, which is the lawyer provided by the government, generally someone who's got a lot of cases, doesn't make a lot of money, doesn't really care too much, the way you're treated in terms of presenting your evidence and everything is going to be very disappointing. You're not going to have this really fierce advocate. You're going to have someone who's encouraging you to just, you know, plead guilty and get it over with. And that conversation, which I talk to a lot of people, and they're talking about get it over with and get it over with, this is really, really a shame, because this ends up being where instead of, you know, really dealing with your case and fighting your case, a lot of people have a lot of emphasis on closing the books, getting it over with, and end up having very significant consequences later, which end up screwing up their lives that they don't realize at the time because they're so focused on just, you know, making the immediate pain go away. When I go to court, and I'm not saying it's, you know, particularly because of me, but in general, if you're a professional as an attorney, I can get the judge to delay the case, which is always positive, you know, in terms of them, you know, the other side, the state losing interest in it. I can always get special aspects. I get the evidence handed to me. I can make deals with the prosecutor. I can, you know, try to, you know, get more favorable terms. There is so much flexibility. It's really a completely different universe. And you really see, and the cruelty of it, is that someone who has, you know, more experience and certainly more money to hire an attorney privately, you know, and for the same kind of charges, ends up getting a much better deal or even having the case dismissed because I find things that are wrong about the case compared to, and I'm telling you, it's a line of people every time that are walking in and just pleading guilty or having the public defender just, you know, convince them to plead guilty, quote unquote, to get it over with. And, you know, in our television system, people see, you know, trials and these dramatic witnesses and all these moments of law and all that. And the reality is that that's less than 1% of cases. The vast, vast majority of cases are, you know, organized deals pleaded out. And so what was really harsh for me with this guy who is, you know, on the show, is that he didn't listen to me. And that's another very hard problem. I think part of what happened to him is that he was very shocked by what happened. The woman that he cared about ended up turning on him, which happens. And then he's from another country. He was from Europe. And so it's not like, you know, the Dark Ages, but he didn't understand, you know, how procedures were different. And a lot of people really think that they're going to go to court and the judge is going to spend a lot of time thinking about their case and that they're going to get exonerated or something. Or there's going to be this moment in the movies with the trumpets playing, like in the Rocky moment, where he's going to be okay and they're all going to apologize and they're going to realize they made a mistake and they're going to end up arresting the girlfriend instead because she made a false charge. And the truth is that really doesn't often happen. Now, when we talk about, you know, this thing that I started with, it's very hard to accept that people get away with murder or whatever. And I don't know everything about this case. But, for example, it is remarkable that this woman you knew that you used to date dies. She dies owing a lot of money under a lot of financial cloud. She dies in her house. I don't know if her husband was there or what the story was. She dies with her face down in a pillow, suffocating, supposedly intoxicated, but apparently she was a heavy drinker anyway, so she may have found herself intoxicated a lot of the time, and she may have had a very high threshold for intoxication, as some people do when they drink quite a bit. And you see how, you know, it's not like the TV show. You don't have Columbo going around and checking everything and interviewing all the witnesses and very suspicious and so forth. You have police that have a lot of cases to deal with. You have detectives that are overburdened. There's a lot of crime in a big city like Los Angeles and other big cities. And the detectives may have looked at the case and they may have said, you know, it is possible that either someone else in the house, the husband or one of the friends or who knows, might have, you know, pushed her face in the pillow or suffocated her or whatever the story was. It's kind of hard to accept that it just happened as an accident. But remember, they have to be able to prove that this was, you know, some kind of criminal act, and they may have decided that it was just too hard. The case was not famous. She wasn't on TV, so you didn't have, like, all these people demanding justice. And so a lot of these things just sort of disappear in the night. And then, you know, she also, it appears, did not have any kind of autopsy. And then her ashes were, so she was cremated and her ashes were spread into the water or whatever. And, you know, there goes any possible...
Wait a minute. How? I got to ask you a question, though.
Yeah.
How could there not have been an autopsy if they determined a cause of death?
There are different kinds of levels of autopsies, Tom. And I think there's some kind of a thing that they do that's much more cursory. That they you know, they examine her body and they see the face and the certain aspects of the cheeks and nose, and they show that she had suffocated, and they're not necessarily doing like this whole, you know, cutting the person open and doing X-rays. And like, you remember Quincy used to have like the electron microscope, and he used to do all the things with, like, you know, if there was marks and pressure on the face or whatever. They may have done something very cursory, very, very quickly, having a lot of cases to deal with. And she wasn't, like I said, super famous. The case wasn't high publicity or, you know, considered particularly important. She didn't have relatives there screaming for justice. And they may have just said, well, it's strange, but it happens, and we don't have enough evidence to really go for something else. And they may have closed the books on it in that way. When I read it this way now, I mean, I don't know, seriously. I mean, I've seen alcoholics, I've seen drunk people, but how drunk do you have to be to have your face down in the pillow to the point of suffocation that you would not instinctively, you know, twist or shiver or move away and get yourself breathing again, you know? I mean, I remember in university screwing around with drunk people, and you could, you know, pour water on them or, like, you know, get a magic marker and write on their face or whatever. You know, they still have, you know, general reflexes and so forth. It's very hard to believe. You know, I understand, when, like I said, with Jimi Hendrix, where he choked on his vomit. But again, this is something that didn't have that. And they're talking about just a straight suffocation. It's very, very unreasonable. But what I was trying to explain in the context of our system is that, you know, the standard of proof in terms of a murder or to prove any kind of crime is a very high standard. And if the person is dead and everyone else is saying, you know, we didn't do anything, and there isn't a whole lot of evidence around, there isn't a big, you know, outpour demanding justice, it may not come. The police only solve a certain percentage of murders, approximately 50 to 60%. And, you know, with other crimes like rapes and so forth, it's supposed to be a lot lower. There's some publicity lately on the JonBenet Ramsey case, which is actually by now quite old. And they were interviewing with Dr. Phil, the son, who at the time was only like 9 or 10 years old. I think that he may have killed her. But the reality is that after all this time, and all kinds of experts and evidence and recreations and all this other stuff, that crime has never been solved. And there are a lot of things that happen in this world that are pretty strange, such as the death of your ex-girlfriend there, Tom. But the reality is that sometimes, you know, we're just never going to know. And the guilty person, you know, may confess to the priest on their deathbed, and that's about it. The system itself, as it is certainly in the United States very, very overburdened. And that's something that we use to our advantage. You know, and I have people that aren't committing murders, but I have people with, you know, DUIs and assaults and all this other stuff. And because there are so many cases and the courts are under so much pressure to keep things moving along, I can get away with a whole lot of stuff and try to help my client get the best possible deal. And that's what we're trying to do within the, you know, the confines of law. But you see that it is possible that these things happen, and if nobody's carrying on for justice and the detectives are doing the best they can but they don't have that much information, they're going to say, well, this is strange, but it seems like an accident, and that's about the best we can do. Seriously.
Wow. Unbelievable. All right. Well,
let me ask you, Tom, do you think seriously, have you ever been so intoxicated that you would have put your face in a pillow and suffocated and not moved?
No.
You wouldn't have woken up or snorted or twisted or done something?
Something.
Remember in the movies when they suffocate someone with a pillow, they're kicking and screaming and, like, you know, punching, right? That's all natural reactions, right?
Right. Having said that, this is a hardcore alcoholic.
Okay. Even
and,
so.
And, you know, I don't know how it is to be a hardcore alcoholic, so I really don't know.
I mean, you've had contact with people that were alcoholics. You talked about your family, right?
Yeah, of course.
So do you think that one of these people could have had their face down in the water and drowned and not noticed?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Well, I'm with you, Tom. But it's one of those mysteries in life, you know? We may never know.
We may never know. And the reason I have my concerns about this is because I got phone calls from this person. And at one point she asked me to set her up with a divorce attorney. Another point she, another point she had said she was being terrorized and could not talk to me on the phone because if he heard that she was talking to a man on the phone, he'd flip out and... she was going out and calling me from cars.
Yeah, so she's scared of her husband.
Right.
Well, what the hell does that tell you? I mean, isn't that something? When somebody talks about they're scared of their spouse, husband, or whatever, and then they end up dead, right? Isn't that one of those TV movies, you know?
Well, that's why my first reaction was that this person committed suicide when I first could not reach her and did not know what we know now.
It's very hard to accept. I don't know, honestly, that there's very much more to do. I mean, you know, you could have someone, you know,
well, nothing you can do now. You have no evidence.
Well, you could have someone talk to the husband, but I'm sure he's not particularly interested in being interviewed.
Well, you caught me.
Yeah. In the movies, not in real life.
Right.
In the movies, he's racked with guilt, you know?
No, I mean, it just sounds... it does sound like a movie plot, because... there's the perfect way to get rid of the evidence, to say she wanted to be have her ashes scattered all over Monterey Bay.
But what if we found out that she had a life insurance policy, and by her death, the husband collected $1 million or whatever, or even more?
And they had money problems, so who knows what's possible.
Right, so they were freaking out about money, so he figured, I get rid of her, I get $1 million, pay everything off, and get a fresh new start.
Right.
It's not outside the realm of possibility, and you see how these things can happen.
You wonder how often they happen.
I think it happens a lot more often than people would ever care to acknowledge.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to, among other things, we'll talk to the callers at 901-3000, Tom. Also, though, just so you have time to think about it, Adam, we have a listener who has asked us to talk about the latest development in the Derrick Rose rape case. Derrick Rose, a basketball player who's played his whole career for the Chicago Bulls. He just ended up on the New York Knicks, but he hasn't played for them yet. And he is being accused of rape, and there's a new development in the case. And at the request of a listener, we're going to talk about that coming up as well. The number is 901-3000-TOM. 901-3000-TOM to talk to Adam Sachs. It's 901-3000. 866.
The entire Tom Likas experience in your pants. Get the app now. 901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
It's the Tom Likas Show. From Wilsonville, Oregon. Here we are with a bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show. 901-3000-TOM. We're here with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. 901-3000-TOM. If you have questions for Adam, if you need free legal advice, 901-3000-866. All right, we have this lawsuit. The NBA's Derrick Rose, formerly of the Chicago Bulls, soon to be of the New York Knicks. He's being sued by a woman. He and two friends of his, alleging that they took turns raping her when she was too drunk to consent. So a listener asked you to comment on the latest development here. And that is that a federal judge has ruled today that this woman must use her real name if the case goes to trial. What's going on here?
Well, this is something that I'm always surprised when you see these high-profile types and these athletes and celebrities. They're so naive about this, you know? It's amazing how, with a little money, power, and fame, women are just dying to have sex with you all of a sudden, you know? And unfortunately, women today are very predatory. Now, I feel bad for this lady if, you know, she was raped by this guy, or gang raped, as she claims. But what we're looking at here is not a criminal case, but a civil case. And she wants to apparently get a very big judgment against these against him and this other person that was there, saying that she was raped by him. But what's interesting, and we've seen this, for example, in the Kobe Bryant case, and this is also, Tom, how you got some national attention over this. They're trying to keep her name secret. They're referring to her as Jane Doe. And the judge allowed that to go on for a while, but at this point, she is now saying that she shouldn't have to ever deal with any kind of publicity and so forth. And so they want her name to be released in the context of the civil case. And apparently she's fighting it, and the judges, and as you say, the federal court had decided that it's time for them to give her real name. And she seems, if you look at this, very, very bent on getting money. There are text messages. She seemed to have been very into what was going on. They were having conversations about which sex toys to use and so forth, and what she was into and so forth. And it looks ultimately as though, and this is not unusual, that as a woman, she expected somehow that he was going to, you know, give her money for the rest of her life and take care of her, when he apparently just wanted to fool around with her because she was a hot piece of ass. And we've seen very often that for women, consent is all about how they feel the next day. And if the guy calls and acts nice, then they consented, apparently. But if he blows them off, then they slowly come to realize that they were raped. And this is something where you have, like I said, a celebrity who's got a lot of money, and she is trying to get a nice big paycheck. It's really, really a fact that there are a lot of women out there who are trying to get pregnant by famous guys or by athletes that have money and have fame, and they think that that's their ticket. It seems very often today, especially, to be the main goal of women to not have to work and to find a way of getting an annuity. If they are only having access to average guys, then they, you know, get pregnant by an average guy and take half his money if they can. If he's got a good job, that could be a lot of money. But the absolute bonanza would be to have a baby with a really famous guy, such as an NBA player. What amazes me, and I have to say this, is I cannot believe that these guys, these athletes and whatnot, fall for this nonsense. I know that they're young and they're, you know, wild and free or whatever, and they're making a lot of money and they think they can get away with stuff, but they do have managers and agents, and I'm very surprised that these guys don't tell them, you know, you got to really pay attention to who you're with and what you're doing, because, you know, you're subject to getting sued or blackmailed or false charges and whatnot and whatnot. And we have a society now that really pushes the image of victimhood, where the woman is supposed to be this victim, and it's so sad and how cruelly she was treated, and look how the law protects her name. His name, of course, is, you know, humiliatingly splashed all over the media, you know, that he's a rapist or he's accused of rape or whatever. Everyone assumes he's guilty. But the victim, poor little flower virgin, she, of course, is protected. And, Tom, you remember how much heat you took when you named Kobe Bryant's accuser, for example. Or
right.
Or the girl in, I think you also did the Duke LaCrosse one, as I recall.
I did.
So did you, what was your thinking here? Would you publicize this person's name if we had it?
Of course.
Yeah?
I think it should be a matter of course. If feminists mean what they say, that rape is a crime of violence, not a crime of sex, then that means, just like murder is a crime of violence, everybody accused, everybody involved, the victim, everybody should be named.
Interesting. Do you understand the theory of why they try to protect the rape? They call it rape shield, that the woman is going to be afraid to come forward if it's going to end up, you know, impacting very negatively on her, and it's going to be something
well,
that's going to,
you know,
humiliate
when people
her
get
in the
mugged,
public eye.
Yeah, you know, when people get mugged, they get named in the paper. They were victims of violence. People who were victims of the bombing over the bombings over the weekend in New York and New Jersey. Many of those names have appeared in the media. The fact is that when there are victims of violence, those names usually end up in the story if the names are available.
You know, so, I mean, it's an interesting question in terms of you know, how society is supposed to balance these two things. And I think that when we saw those cases, and particularly the ones with the Duke LaCrosse and Kobe Bryant, those cases seemed very strange. You know, they seem very off. And I think that that was part of the thinking in terms of not being afraid to name, you know, the supposed victim. And, you know, if they're going to be put under the microscope in that way, that's something that's going to be done by the defense anyway. So it doesn't seem like anything that's so special. They always have this woman on television saying how when she was raped, and then she had to go to trial, she felt that she was raped again, and that she had
right.
to re-experience the trauma of the crime and so forth. And that seems kind of ridiculous, you know. I don't think that real victims should really feel that way. I think that they should feel good to go to trial, because that's their chance to tell their story and to get justice and be vindicated. This also, Tom,
By the way, what you have now is the fact that rather than being afraid to testify or afraid to call the police, now women call and report with guys with reckless abandon because they know that their names will never be revealed. And if the guy is a celebrity, you're going to get a lot of juice, and that name is going to repeat it over and over and over. And I think that when you don't name a victim, and you do name the perpetrator, it already seems like that person's guilty of something, because why are we keeping the other name secret?
It does seem to imply that somehow, you know, the rights of the accused are not as important as the rights of, you know, the other side who's, let's say, doing the accusing of the alleged victim and so forth. And we've seen, I just think, a tremendous outbreak of cases that don't make sense. And they seem to be run by publicity. I've mentioned that crazy woman Sulkowitz, who walked around Columbia University where she was a student with her mattress. They call her Mattress Girl. She carried her mattress around for several semesters, saying that she had been raped on that mattress. And there was no prosecution, and the university dropped the case, saying that there was nothing to it. but she becomes like a heroine for women and some kind of role model that she, you know, believed her story and people should believe her because she's a woman and that she was violated and all this good stuff. And, you know, we see so many of these kinds of things where it somehow created some kind of nobility and some kind of special treatment to be a victim. You know, one of the questions that I have in my mind, which I see this all the time in court, is the issue of domestic violence. And, you know, why is domestic violence worse than violence? I mean, I don't understand that connection. I've never really understood that.
Well, it's the exact same thing as the hate crime distinction.
Well, that's another good one.
You know, people commit hate crimes, they're already committing crimes.
Right, but if you rob someone or you're cruel to someone and there's a racial element, that somehow makes it 10,000 times worse.
And supposedly.
Right. And in the context, again, of domestic violence, you know, it's wrong to assault another person, but if it's a stranger or someone at a bar, then somehow it's your wife, it's somehow, again, 10,000 times worse. And the impact legally should be much, much more extreme. It seems that somehow it's true society suffers a lot more for this, but the other problem is that you're incentivizing a whole class of people to see and want to be victims because victims get the big paydays. And victims, you know, when you talk about a woman who's crazy and she's an attention whore, to be the victim is so much attention. I have had a couple of cases where the victim, the woman who had, you know, various claims that she had been assaulted or whatever, was interviewed by the police, and you could see how much fun she was having. That she was literally, I mean, this is like, you know, it's like kind of this grainy video of her, but she was giggling, you know, and she was smiling, and she was so excited to be the center of attention. All these people are, you know, talking to her, and they're asking her questions, and she's telling her story with all this dramatic flair, and they're promising her, you know, they're going to really put the guy away, and it's going to be wonderful when she testifies. And you see how these girls are able to cry on cue, and how false it all is, and how disgusting it is that we've created a society like that. And, you know, this ball player, you know, I don't know what he did. It's very strange. But you could see how he got into some kind of, you know, half-intoxicated drunk thing with some chick who, you know, changed her mind later on. And this is something that you know, she has really every incentive to want to do. The fact that literally she could get millions and millions of dollars from a lawsuit and also humiliate him and get attention. And, you know, she has all these lawyers talking to her, and they're all, you know, listening to her every word and the jury and everything. That for, I think, a certain mentality of woman is a whole lot of excitement. And we're really playing to that in our society where we really shouldn't be. And the idea that she then, on top of it, can hide her name, whereas the male guy, the victim, you know, the one that she claims victimized her, he's a famous person, or even if he isn't, and his name is all over the news. I don't know how that's justified. It's just absolutely unfair.
Even to this day, Kobe Bryant, who was never convicted of anything, everybody remembers what he was accused of, and very few people remember the name of the alleged victim.
Right. But I think that if you hadn't done what you did at the time, the name of the victim, alleged victim, might never have been known.
Right. Although it was very easy to find out, and many people knew the name already in Eagle, Colorado. They knew it. We found it out because the Los Angeles Times did a story trying to talk to people who knew the alleged victim, whose name was Caitlin Faber, by the way.
Right.
And so the L.A. Times went to Eagle, Colorado, and started asking people what she was like and what they knew about this case and what have you. And in the L.A. Times, they put all the names of all the places they went to ask questions. And so I found out, for example, at the 7-Eleven in Eagle, Colorado, that they had spoken to the reporter, and they had a very specific opinion about Caitlin Faber. And so we called that 7-Eleven, and we said, hey.
I love it.
Saw your name in the L.A. Times. Could you tell us the name of the victim? And they did.
Oh, I love it. That's so rich, Tom.
So, you know, the thing is, people think there's a law because they've heard of something called the Rape Shield Law.
Right.
And they think that means that you can't say the name of an alleged rape victim.
Right.
But that's not true. It's the news media themselves who voluntarily don't give the name out.
That's correct.
But
that's actually something that they do. They're self-censoring.
Right, but we don't do that.
I understand that, but if you think about it, that's actually making a judgment call. Now, the real rape shield law, generally speaking in court, is that when a woman charges a man with rape and he goes on trial, in his defense, he cannot talk about her past. Okay? So he is shielded and she is shielded and he is prevented from talking about the fact that she was slutty or that she used to be a prostitute or that she had 100 sexual partners or whatever. That's the rape shield law.
Right.
But generally speaking, when you talk about the media and so forth, the media is actually doing what they think politically is some kind of, you know, social justice thing, that they know her name. They certainly do. If the 7-Eleven guy knew her name, you can be sure the reporters knew it, and they certainly got it from the court files, which are generally public. But they are themselves not saying it and self-censoring. And meanwhile, they're screaming Kobe Bryant's name from the rooftops. And that just absolutely is insane.
Right.
And it turns the whole idea of our system, which is the presumption of innocence. That means that a person accused of a crime is presumed innocent until the very day that they're convicted. And that's the sickness of this, where no matter what the story is, until you're convicted by a jury or by a judge or a court under due process, which means that you have the right to defend yourself and present witnesses and evidence in your defense, and that there was some fairness to the system, that the person is innocent. And it's ugly, for example, this basketball player has to have this cloud over him. And I think it would also affect him in terms of, you know, these guys make a lot of money from endorsement deals. I'm sure a lot of companies had not wanted to, you know, have him as their celebrity pitch man if he's got an accusation against him and so forth. And that's a big loss for these guys. So this is big money. It's serious stuff. And what's harmful and hurtful in our society, especially today, is that women know that they have this power. And unfortunately, people that have power, whatever it is, will tend to use and abuse it and lose their minds. That's what's happening.
We're going to take a break here. When we come back, Adam Sachs is going to tell you how you can get in touch with him directly. So if you need some legal help, he'll be able to turn you in the right direction. Meanwhile, 901-3000-TOM, that's the number here. 901-3000-TOM. It's 901-3000-866.
The entire Tom Likas experience in your pants.
Get the app now.
901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
It's the Tom Likas Show. Adam Sachs, where can people get in touch with you?
Well, you can call me at toll-free 800-340-7320. That's 1-800-340-7320. You can check me out on Facebook and online, www.adamlawyer.com. And send me an email, which I love, adam@adamlawyer.com. And that is something that I read and answer personally. Tom, the Pitt divorce is definitely getting quickly out of control. And we're going to talk about that next show, I promise.
I'm looking forward to it. By the way, if you missed your chance to call in to Adam, Don't forget, he'll be here again live, and you can call him at that time. And when is that going to be? Well, it's going to be this coming Tuesday, 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern time.
iHeart, this app, a lot more. Download the Tom Likas app now.
901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
From the New Normal Newsroom, it's news for guys. I'm Gary Dino.
Yes.
This time it's New Jersey in Trenton. A 61-year-old woman stabbed her male roommate after he refused to have sex with her. This is happening way too much. I mean, how many times just in like the last 3 weeks?
Yeah.
We have crazy broads. Most of them generally pretty goddamn ugly. I don't know about the 61-year-old.
I wish they would show her face.
Apparently, they get turned down for sex.
They won't show her face. I'm upset over
that. No. I know. Prosecutors say she stabbed her roommate in the chest. This was on Friday night. Say the man was seriously injured, but was able to explain to the cops what had happened. He's expected to survive, but further details on his condition haven't been disclosed. Your friend will be in jail till she comes up with $10,000.
By the way, the judge reduced Sharon's bail to $10,000. It was higher.
What's the reason for that?
I don't know. I don't. For a guy, it would have gone up.
Right, of course. You just stabbed somebody.
Yeah.
That's the craziest thing I ever heard of. The Oakland police scandal gets even bigger. Now, three more officers involved. This is just crazy. It never ends.
Yeah, this is a terrible thing for officers in Northern California because prosecutors are coming hard and coming strong. And
right.
It's going to be tough to explain because I think these guys knew this person was underage. So they're going to be in big trouble, man. Big trouble.
Mm-hmm. A newlywed wife has testified against her teacher husband after he got busted having sex with a 17-year-old pupil of his. This is a fascinating story. These two over in Wales and apparently went on a so-called school trip to California.
Yeah.
And that's where they started banging.
Her name is like Jersey Shore or something like that.
Right.
Or Sherry Shore. Sherry Shore. I'm just calling her Jersey Shore.
She doesn't look half bad, right?
No, I'm serious. So they're out having a nice time in California, and then everything went south.
Right. Well, that's where it started. And then it turns out that he would bring the kid back to their place when the wife was out and bang her there.
This chick
works for the BBC, by the way, apparently.
I don't know if I'd fool around on her.
I know.
Man. It's and she has a good job, good. Everything. I mean,
right. She
has a better job than he does.
Yep. Finally, Men's Journal has a piece called What She's Actually Thinking About While She's Having Sex. And these are things you probably expect. That, number one, am I taking too long to reach climax? Apparently, broad's always worried about this. Is this going on for too long? Number two, she's probably thinking about one of her handsome coworkers, according to Men's Journal, and not you.
That's horrible.
That's really horrible.
That's horrible.
Number three, not terribly surprising at all, she's probably thinking about flaws in her own body, even as you guys are fucking.
Right.
She's probably self-conscious about something or other. And this is kind of depressing. She's probably thinking about how you fit on her scoreboard of everybody she's ever been with.
See if you're batting 300, 400, 200,
right.
Or 100.
Yeah. She's comparing you to every dick she's ever had.
No, I think the last one's the worst.
Yeah, everybody knows that this is most likely very true in most cases. She's just wondering when this is going to be over.
Oh, that's so brutal.
When is this finally going to end?
That's brutal.
That's reality. Plenty more at newsforguys.com, and of course you can find our podcast at GaryandDino.com from Wilsonville, Oregon. We're back to the Tom Likas Show right after this.
This is the new normal.
You're a homo. That's all there is to it.